Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom.
Five.
Commencing countdown.
Four.
Engines on.
Three.
Check ignition.
Two.
And may God's love be with
one,
you.
One. Lift off.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I am Christian Sager. So you may have gotten the idea from our little intro there that that was our homage to David Bowie. We're recording this 2 days after he passed away, so we thought it'd be fun to do a little space oddity routine since we're going to be talking about space mirrors. So how do these work? Why are we putting mirrors in outer space? It's not to look at ourselves. It's not to look at planet Earth, right? There's many reasons behind this.
Yeah, though I will say that I did run across at least one scenario in which they were talking about using mirrors in space as a means to better analyze conditions on the Earth.
Oh, but, is that right?
Yeah, but for the most part, yeah, we're not putting them up there.
But they're not putting like haunted mirrors up in space, right? Not like the mirror from Oculus.
Not yet.
That's the sequel. I just came up with it right there. Oculus 2, Space Mirror.
Ooh, yeah, the Oculus mirror is used in a telescope.
It gets put in the Hubble, Hubble Space Telescope or the James Webb. Yeah, exactly.
And it's worth mentioning the haunted mirrors, because haunted mirrors, I feel, capture a lot of the mystique of the mirror itself. Even if you sort of know how a mirror works, there's still something kind of magical and uncanny about it.
Oh,
and therefore, the idea of putting them in space, putting them out there in orbit, is inherently kind of weird and mystical feeling.
Yeah, a potential event horizon scenario.
Yeah.
So before we dive into the mirror stuff, I just want to remind everybody, you know, Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a podcast, and most of you know us from listening to the show, and thank you for doing so. But we do a bunch of other stuff, too, and we'd love if you check that out. So we've got videos that we produce and star in. We've got articles that we write. And the best way that you can find most of that stuff is by visiting us at stufftoblowyourmind.com. That is the landing site for everything that Joe, Robert, and I are producing.
Indeed. And hey, we don't care how you listen to us. There are various different ways to listen to a podcast these days. But if you want to help us out, whatever system you use, be it iTunes or Google, Spotify, you name it, give us a little love there. If they have a way to review us, give us some stars, do that. It helps us out, helps out the algorithm, helps support the show.
And we love to hear, not just if you've done those, but we love to hear your reactions to the episodes, or maybe some ideas that you've had, or facts that we maybe didn't find in our research. So you can always reach out to us on social media and let us know about those things. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Tumblr. We are Blow the Mind on those platforms. We also do Periscopes every Friday at noon Eastern Standard Time. So if you want to hang out with us for 20 minutes or so and talk about what's going on with the show this week, what we're working on for articles or whatever, that's the best way to do that, too. Talk to us directly and throw us those hearts on Periscope.
Yeah. All right. You know, as we get going here, this is not an episode that deals exclusively with telescopes.
No.
That is a topic that deserves its own episode or couple of episodes to explore some of this amazing terrestrial and orbital observatories that we've rolled out over the years. But in discussing the role of mirrors in space, we have to talk at least briefly about their role in the telescope.
Yeah, so the basic gist of reflector telescopes, which is the kind of telescope that uses mirrors instead of lenses, is that the mirrors collect light within them from a distant object, bring that light to a point or to a focus, and then through an eyepiece lens, take that focus and magnify it for our human retina, right? So we can see through it. Its ability to collect light is directly related to the diameter of the mirror being used to gather the light, okay? And Isaac Newton was the first one to develop this idea for the reflector telescope back in 1680. He used a curved metal mirror to collect the light and reflect it into focus. Then in 1722, John Hadley developed a design using parabolic mirrors. And these are relatively still in popular use today. The disadvantage of reflector telescopes, though, is that you have to clean and realign these mirrors, and that actually comes into play with the Hubble telescope.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's some flaw to it. But reflectors are also subject to some light loss as well. So Hubble, we mentioned it before. We joked about putting the Oculus mirror inside of it. It's a Cassegrain, that's the title of it, reflector telescope, where the light enters through a small opening and bounces off primary and secondary mirrors inside of it. It's sort of in like a W formation is how the light is bouncing around in there. And there's other smaller mirrors inside to distribute the light to the eventual instruments that then broadcast them back to us. The mirrors are made, you know, different from how Newton made his with just a sheet of metal. They are glass coated with layers of pure aluminum and magnesium fluoride. But the Hubble has a couple of flaw in its mirrors. And so what they used to do is they had several small mirrors inside of it that were called co-star. And the idea was that they would intercept the beam from the primary mirror that had a flaw, refocus it, and then make it so that it, you know, is able to be parsed out. But today, the instruments that are built into it have corrective optics that compensate for that flaw, so they don't need the co-star mirrors anymore. And then the big one that I'm sure a lot of you have heard about is James Webb Telescope, which is coming up. It is an even bigger mirror that is 20 feet in diameter. In fact, we just sent a team here from How Stuff Works up to the NASA observatory there where they're working on the James Webb Telescope. And a couple of videos were produced by our team, primarily led by Holly Fry from the History Podcast. But I'm looking forward to seeing that stuff because they apparently got real up close and personal with the James Webb Telescope and the production of
it. And maybe even the haunted mirror at its core.
Yeah, I got to ask Holly if that Oculus mirror made its way in there. There's also some considerations for something that's called a liquid mirror telescope that could potentially be mounted on the moon. It would be between 66 and 328 feet long, which would collect 1,736 times more light than the Hubble telescope does now. So that's just my brief primer here on telescopes and their role. And yes, we have space. We have mirrors in space for telescopes, but we're going to talk a little bit beyond using them to see far and look into other ways that you could use them potentially as weapons or just to make people happier, apparently.
Yeah. And, you know, it's also worth noting that, you know, especially with terrestrial observatories, you have mirrors that are solid one piece, and then you also have mirrors that are composed of various segments that all come together. You mentioned the liquid mirror, and I have to throw in about a new proposition.
Okay.
This just came out. This made the rounds from NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Good old JPL.
Yeah. 2015, orbiting rainbows.
Ooh.
So, and you already know it's going to be good with a title like that. But this would be a reflective cloud. This is theoretical. This would be a reflective cloud of glitter-like grains that are just floating there in space, and they're trapped and manipulated by multiple laser beams. So you don't have to worry about structure or backing material.
Okay.
You don't have to worry about, you know, unfurling the sails, etc. The pressure of the laser light coming in from different directions would shape the cloud and push the small grains to align in the same direction.
Okay.
So kind of a nano mirror cloud.
Yeah, that sounds interesting.
Yeah.
I'm curious. I mean, it sounds like it would be a long way off given how long the work on James Webb's been going on.
Yeah, but it's certainly an innovation that is worth thinking about in terms of these various applications that we're going to discuss here, some of which, you know, are a little more feasible than others. We should also mention solar sails because that's an important aspect of the use of mirrors in space as well, or at least mirrored surfaces. So the concept itself goes back to the 16th century. Astronomer, mathematician Johannes Kepler noticed that comet tails always point away from the sun, implying that sunlight itself was pushing them around like they were little cosmic
windsocks. Yeah, he thought there was a solar breeze.
Yeah, and there is. There is a solar wind. We know that now. We know now that sunlight is little more than a stream of photons, tiny particles of light, and they don't possess mass, but they do boast a linear momentum. And when they bounce off a reflective surface, they push against that surface. And this has been demonstrated, the use of solar sails. The Mariner 10 probe successfully demonstrated the technology in 74 when NASA used the probe's solar arrays as an impromptu solar sail. Subsequent American, Russian, Indian, and Japanese missions have also further proven the technology's feasibility. But we really haven't taken the solar sail concept and fleshed it out in a more, remarkable way. We haven't created like full-on solar sail vessels.
Yeah, the idea is that like eventually the continuous force of all those sunlight particles would propel a spacecraft potentially five times faster than traditional rockets.
Yeah, and then if you could also throw in varying theoretical means of boosting them with lasers. So you point the laser beams at the sail and add a little bit of artificial wind to those solar sails. So this sounds good, right? We're using mirrors in space as a real means and as a near future means to gaze at the cosmos.
Perception
as a means
and propulsion.
Yeah, as a means to move through it. But what else can we do?
Well, apparently we can hurt each other, which is one of our favorite ways to examine space, right? We love talking about space weapons here on Stuff to Blow Your Mind.
Yeah, and we've seen time and time again that if you want any kind of a science program funded, if it has a weapon aspect to it, then all the better. That's how human civilization gets excited about science.
And that's exactly the case with something called the Sun Gun. And this comes from a 1945 Life magazine article. Basically, there were U.S. Army technical experts that were in Germany, and they came across notes for the Sun Gun. And the concept was by a German rocket scientist named Hermann Oberth, and he pitched this idea in 1923. Now, his idea for this was totally peaceful, right? He wanted to use it to do things like illuminate ports or thaw out frozen rivers. He also thought that you could potentially use this as a, I mean, he was thinking way ahead, as a refueling station for spaceships. So there were some sort of sci-fi-ish ideas here.
Yeah, Oberth is one of those names you see thrown around at times with Wernher von Braun. He was very much involved with the German rocket program in the creation of the V2.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, in this situation, Oberth comes up with this idea and the Nazis go, you know what? What if we could use that to take the rays and burn our enemy cities and boil the ocean?
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down again to this case where you have scientists who have this, their areas of expertise. They have their research they care dearly about, but you're ultimately having to deal with a warlike and dogmatic force at the top of the chain. And you have to appeal to those masters.
Hey,
right?
It's like that nowadays. Like, you know, a lot of the scientists that I know who get funding for their work get it from the DOD. I mean, one of my closest friends, used to do work at MIT, and he always reminds me that, the GPS was first developed with DOD money. And I'm talking about the Department of Defense in the United States for our international listeners.
Yeah, so the scenario more or less remains the same. It's easier to cast a nefarious eye, obviously, on scientific experiments going on and scientific endeavors going on during the Third Reich and under the Third Reich. But it has always been the case that if you have a big project, war is the way it gets green.
Well, there don't seem to be any surviving schematics to actually show how they were going to build this mirror sun gun. But the Life magazine article has like drawings and illustrations in it, which I'm assuming that they came with the notes that were uncovered by these technical experts, unless they were drawn for the article.
And those illustrations are available. You can find them, I think, on Google. And they're wonderful. They're just fabulous retro futurist visions of what life in space could consist of.
They didn't really have a plan either on how they were going to have a rocket actually get the sun gun up into space. But the idea here was that it would be pre-assembled before it even got up there.
Okay.
And in the same article, they hypothesized that at the distance that the Germans were planning to set up the mirror, which was 5,100 miles up, the image it would cast on Earth, once they actually crunched the math, would be 40 miles in diameter, and it would not be hot enough to do any damage. So there would be like a 40-mile sunburst that, I don't know, maybe it would give you a bit of a tan.
Yeah, that's and that's one of the cool things about that Life article is they just immediately tear down the idea.
Yeah.
Of course, it's also worth noting that the German scientists themselves, they were saying that this would be like 50 or 100 years off anyway. So they weren't saying we can do this next year, guys. But yeah, it seems like if you try to extrapolate Oberth's work into a weapon, as some of the Nazi individuals may have seemed to have done, it's not going to work. But as a means to slightly heat areas,
right?
Yeah, it could work.
And I'm curious, like especially given what we're going to talk about Russian applications for this as well. But you know, maybe they could thaw a river, but at the very least, they could literally shed some light on a situation. So, okay, here's the basic breakdown of Oberth's thing, even if we don't have access to his schematics. The idea is that the mirror would be a concave disc that's 1 mile in diameter. So we keep coming back to this, the importance of how big the diameter is in the mirror. The crew would live inside the mirror, and they would breathe air produced by thousands of pumpkin plants. I loved that. Huh. And even in some of the drawings, they sort of show where these pumpkin plants would be placed, that they would be generating oxygen for the crew.
I wonder why I guess because of the vines. Sure. They feel like that would be a good support structure for,
It wasn't clear. It wasn't clear. And, you know, unfortunately, Oberth's actual reasoning for it was kind of lost to time. There was also some weird stuff because the design was pitched to have centrifugal rotation and mimic gravity, kind of like we're familiar with now from 2001: A Space Odyssey,
kind of
right? That classic
design, right?
Scene. Yeah. But they also would wear magnet shoes that would allow them to stick to the floors and walls at the same time to compensate for the gravity loss. So maybe it's sort of like, I'm thinking of that scene in Star Trek: The Next Generation where they put on those like magnet boots and walk along in the hull of the Star Trek Enterprise.
Oh, yeah.
The Star Trek Enterprise? The Spaceship Enterprise. And so the idea here is that there would be tiny little rocket motors that are attached to the mirror, and they would fire those off to control where it was turned so they could aim the light at Earth. But after World War II, you know, the Nazis were done for in terms of the weapon building business. And Oberth went to other nations to see if they would pick up his idea for the peacetime applications he originally came up with them for. He thought the U.S. could build a mirror that's 300 miles in diameter. That's huge. To terraform the Earth. So he had some big ideas, Oberth did. He even suggested, well, you know, it would be expensive, yes, but why don't we just mine all the materials from the moon to keep the costs down? Now, keep in mind, we hadn't even been to the moon.
Right.
He doesn't know what's on the moon. But sure enough, he pitches, yeah, don't worry about it. We'll just we'll make this mirror from moon bits.
See, he's very much thinking a few steps ahead of current science.
Yeah. I mean, this concept is, as far as I can tell, more sci-fi than science. But it was, you know, initially pitched to be developed.
You know, it's interesting that he was already at this point talking about its use for terraforming because in recent decades you've seen space mirrors occasionally pop up as a means to, for instance, terraform Mars.
Yeah, right.
the red planet's too cold, so, you know, you just deploy fleets of orbiting reflective balloons to collect sunlight and reflect it down on the chilly surfaces. That in particular was a scheme that was proposed by University of Arizona's Rigel Wada, who theorizes that such a scheme could raise the Martian temperature in a 150-acre patch to Earth-like levels of warmth.
Interesting.
And likewise, you see various theories about how you could use space mirrors as a geoengineering or planet hacking measure here on Earth to counteract global warming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard that as well.
But Oberth already had all of that teeming around in that brain.
Yeah. Back in the 20s, he had the whole thing figured out. He just didn't have the means to achieve it.
I'm going to go back to the sun gun one more time, though. That 1945 edition of Life magazine, in busting it, these are some of the particulars they laid out. They said that the German plan for building may be proved physically impossible by a simple axiom of optics. This is that light cannot be brought to a sharp-pointed focus with lenses or mirrors unless it comes from a sharp-pointed source. It goes on to say that since the sun appears in the sky as a disk and not as a point, the best any optical system could do would be to produce an image of that disk. So at very short focal length, the image is small and hot, but the focus length is increased. The image becomes progressively bigger and cooler. So at the distances that the Germans were dealing with, as you mentioned, they wouldn't be able to cast that laser-like beam of heated intensity on anything. They would just be able to warm things up. Like, haha, enemies, enjoy slightly warmer temperatures in this general vicinity.
Which actually would work out pretty well for the next space mirror we're going to talk about, Project Zinmaya.
That's right. When we come back, we're going to discuss Soviet attempts to cast a little light on the world using space mirrors. Hey, everybody, having a professional-looking website is just an important part of doing business or just representing yourself in today's world. But it can be a real pain, right? You're trying to build this professional-looking thing, and you feel like you don't have the right coding tools at your disposal. You don't have the right skill set to make it happen. But that's where Squarespace comes into play. They offer you intuitive and easy-to-use tools that give you that professional design look regardless of your individual skill level. You don't have to be a coding wizard at all. And you get a free domain if you sign up for a year. You can start your free trial today at squarespace.com. And when you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code MINDBLOWN to get 10% off your first purchase. Again, the promo code is MINDBLOWN. The product is Squarespace. Go try it out and build that website you've been dreaming of. All right, we're back. And we're talking about Project Znamya. Znamya is Russian for banner. Because essentially we're talking about a big reflective banner in space. And this was the brainchild of the Space Regatta Consortium, or SRC, a partnership of seven Russian aerospace management and engineering companies who proposed and ultimately got off the ground two different variations of this space mirror technology.
Yeah, and the interesting and maybe confusing thing about this, too, is the first one that went up was the Znamya 2,
right?
Not Znamya 1. So I wonder whatever happened to the first one, or maybe they just jumped right to 2 after a prototype.
Yeah, and then the second one is Znamya 2.5.
Right. Yeah.
And the third proposed one that never actually happened was going to be Znamya 3.
Yeah, it's sort of like iOS operating systems. They just kind of jumped around with the numbers there. So the idea here is that it's a spinning space reflector, apparently, sort of similar to the sun gun, I guess.
Yeah.
In 1993, the idea was that it would reflect a 3-mile wide patch or a 5-kilometer wide patch of light across a swath of pre-dawn Europe. And now, unfortunately, when they tested it, the clouds obscured much of this, but there were some observers who reported seeing a 1-second flash that was as bright as a full moon. And they were able to see this on top of the Alps. Apparently, there were astronomers who knew that it was being tested, so they were looking for it.
Yeah, full moon shows up a lot in, as a descriptor for how bright this thing actually was.
Yeah.
So, which is, you know, granted, full moon level of luminosity is pretty significant.
It's decent, yeah. Right. Yeah, especially for the purposes that they came up with, at least. So the scientists at the Space Regatta Consortium, their hope was that Zimaya 2 would lead to a constellation of space mirrors that would be in orbit around Earth. And they would use these to light up cities with up to 100 times the full moon's brightness.
So you'd have multiple mirrors operating at the same time, combining their efforts to illuminate an area.
Yeah, and they thought that this would improve morale during the winter, and they would use it just after sunset or just before sunrise. And my first thought was, that is so Russian. Like, that is the coming from New England, which is nowhere near as harsh as a Russian winter. I can understand wanting to dispel the grayness of winter. And I also thought about this. I wonder what that would do to human circadian rhythms, given how light interacts with the human eye and brain.
Well, that was, I think, one of the criticisms that you saw, is that, that people were saying, well, what does this do to the human circadian rhythm? You're essentially rolling out light pollution, more light pollution than urban areas are already producing. So how's that going to mess with the surrounding wildlife?
Yeah, in fact, other astronomers, not the ones that were working on this, were a little bit upset about it because they thought that it was going to obscure their view of the universe. That if they're looking up with the telescopes we're talking about earlier, they're going to be getting all kinds of reflections and problems from this constellation of space mirrors. But the other idea that they had, and this seems like a good one to me, is that they could provide emergency lighting during disasters. So if a city loses its power, they, you know, rotate the mirrors and boom, you've got light for an evening.
Yeah.
If you have to clear out, you know, probably given during a natural disaster.
And I guess you could imagine it being used too in a scenario where, all right, this area doesn't have power now, or for some reason there's an energy shortage. Instead of lighting up all the streets, you just cast the mirror energy down, and then you can provide at least the level of illumination necessary for driving around town.
Yeah, yeah. So this was fairly successful. They thought, okay, the 1 second of full moon light, that's enough for us to call this a success. So let's try it again with Zimaya 2.5 in 1999.
Yeah, this is 6 years later. They set out to try it again. This one was 25 meters, and they were hoping to cast a 7 kilometer diameter bright spot that was expected to have a 5 to 10 moon luminosity. So it was going to be bigger, better. And this was going to be, again, a first step in establishing that constellation that we were talking about earlier, a constellation of reflectors that would allow us to really dose out the illumination. The problem is that when they began to deploy this thing, the Z2's membrane caught on one of Space Station Mir's antenna and ripped it up.
So that was not a success.
Yeah.
And they didn't even get their 1 second of full moon brightness, apparently.
Yeah, and eventually they just have to jettison it and it burns up on reentry. So that's it.
So despite that, they still had, you know, I guess it was already on the books, but they had proposed Zimaya 3. And the idea for this was that it would have been even larger. And its goal was to test a new reflector concept using something called film photovoltaics. And it was proposed to go up somewhere around 2000 or 2001. As far as I can tell, that never happened.
Yeah.
But there's very little information on it, actually, when you go to look it up. There is a BBC article that came out right after 2.5 failed that's basically like, nah, 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 you're never going to get 3 up. Like, it's kind of fascinating little piece. It read a lot more like an editorial than it did like a science article.
Yeah.
They're basically speculating that, you know, this thing was way too expensive. It was beyond the resources that Russia had at the time, and that it was a leftover from when the Soviets had really big space aspirations. So they said it's probably going to stop. And as far as I can tell, it seems like it did. But there's an interesting article that's out there after the antenna problem happened with I'm going to call it Z2.5, by a guy named N. Shapokowski. And he comes up with 5 different proposals that they could have used to fix 2.5 so that 3 would have been more operational. And I'll just go over these real quick. I mean, his paper is very long and academic in nature, but he talks about using something called rational membrane unfolding technology that would leave some of the folds free, so peripherals like the antennas would stretch together with the rest of the mirror as it's unfolding.
So make it so that it is
is less likely to rip apart upon first deployment.
Yep. The other idea he had was to increase the spin so that the membrane needed would have to be heavy enough to withstand the centrifugal forces, but light enough to unfold quickly. And his idea was they'd use compressed air to rapidly unfold the membrane. They'd have little bursts of compressed air shoot out. And then building off of that, he adds the idea, well, why don't we put pipes into the membrane and run the compressed air through those? So 3 is really just kind of a 2.5, if we're sticking with the, the numbering. And then his fourth idea was you would have a compact packing of the membrane. It would unpack like an accordion in outer space. So it would go up all folded together and then it would come out like an accordion. And this led to his fifth idea, which is another similar thing, but the bands of the membrane would unfold in a concertina fashion.
Okay, so I'm imagining essentially a big, vaguely accordion-shaped reflective space balloon.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the conclusion of his article is basically like, maybe we could combine a little bit of idea number 3 with idea number 1 and idea number 5, and we could make this thing work out. But it never did. It never went up.
So with this and some of these other applications of space mirrors, I mean, ultimately what you're getting down to is the manipulation of light. Not only in terms of illumination, but also as far as energy is concerned.
Yeah.
And so really the applications apply to any situation in which you would want to redirect solar energy for propulsion, as we've mentioned, for observation, as we've mentioned, also just for the energy usage. You could potentially use these mirrors to refocus solar energy onto some sort of a solar onto a solar energy collector on solar panels.
That's what I was thinking about. Is if you wanted to get really serious about solar panels, again, the State of the Union was last night, and President Obama was talking a lot about solar energy. Build something like this and have it just beam down the energy right at it. But I don't know if that's practical or not.
Yeah, that's always the challenge with solar energy, whether you're talking something with space mirrors or just, say, passive solar home design.
Yeah.
Like, how do you best design the system so that you maximize the benefits of the solar energy harvesting and that it's not just some sort of expensive plus one.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I would assume that given the costs involved, we've talked about how much it costs to fly things up into outer space before, especially we talked about space weapons in our Rods from God episode.
Yeah.
That I don't know if it would, if the cost benefit analysis works out.
Yeah, indeed. Now, when you start getting into that, far future area.
Yeah.
Obereth was discussing, you know, where you already have the moon base in place and then you can dream outward from that. Mm-hmm. You get into a lot of really far-fetched and really remarkable ideas about how you could use a space mirror. So what if you had a space mirror large enough to reflect the sun's rays back on itself in a meaningful amount?
Okay.
Say, you know, a giant space mirror positioned on the other side of the sun, perhaps, from Earth. Could you essentially make the sun into its own solar sail and then utilize this effect to propel the solar system in the direction of your choice?
Wait, so the solar system itself becomes a spaceship?
Yeah, yeah, that's kind of the idea here. Now, it's definitely a Type 2 Kardashev civilization concept. But the idea is that if you had a megastructure in space, this big reflective megastructure, you would have what is referred to as a Class A stellar engine.
Wow.
That would use the impulse of the radiation emitted by a star to produce thrust. And this is also called a Shchedov thruster.
I imagine navigating spaceship Milky Way, spaceship solar system would be extremely difficult. The calculations involved would be mind-blowing.
Yeah, it would definitely be the domain of a Type 2 civilization,
right,
as opposed to us. And I think I've seen this rolled out occasionally in sci-fi. There's an Ian M. Banks book where the Earth becomes threatened by an Oort cloud that is going to block out most of the sun's rays.
Okay.
And so therefore it becomes necessary to move the solar system
to
a different location. Or perhaps they'd merely move the Earth in that particular novel. I'm having trouble remembering off the top of my head. But yeah, when you start talking about capturing all of the energy in the solar system and then utilizing that, you're in this, this type two, level of far future technology.
And I'm just, it's only just now dawning on me. I didn't even write down a note about this, and I don't want to spoil the movie for anybody who hasn't seen it yet, but there is something like this in the new Star Wars movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you haven't seen it yet,
I have not
right?
seen it yet. Plans keep falling apart.
I don't know that it's mirrors necessarily, but they harness the power of the sun.
Okay. Some sort of solar super weapon then. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm the last person on Earth that has not seen a new film.
I don't know about that. I'm sure that some of you out there haven't seen it yet either. That's why I don't want to go too far into it, but yeah.
But hey, that's one more thing I have to look forward to when I see the new Star Wars film. So there you have it. We've rolled through just a number of the key points in the history of space mirrors and some of their actual and theoretical uses. But we're curious, you know, what else is out there? What's popping around your head when it comes to either sci-fi visions of space mirrors or just sort of possible uses for them? Like, for instance, what about the possibility of using solar mirrors in space to illuminate a particular growing area for crops?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That seems like it would be a natural one, and I didn't get the impression from either the German or Russian designs that they were thinking along those lines.
Yeah, but you could essentially have your own, it's like having your own hydroponic growing area, except you could have just an enormous field somewhere. All you need is the orbital might of a
right.
satellite.
Yeah, you just got to have this multi-billion dollar machine up there. So, if you have ideas about this or more resources for us to follow up on, please let us know. And, you know, like I said at the top, we are always available on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. We don't just post our own stuff on there either. We like to curate a lot of the weird sciencey information that we find or across the web that we don't have time to put into our episodes.
Yeah, so follow us on those accounts if you use them, and you can keep up with us that way. And hey, if you want to reach out to us directly, you can always hit us up on email at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.